So, March 23rd, 1991, I know some of you are like, I wasn't even born yet, but that's when this beautiful woman and I stood before a bunch of people and said, I do, right? We have a video of it. I know I was there. It happened. It was a factual, just 12 hours before that, I was single. And then all it took was that 45-minute ceremony, and I was married, right? I mean, and you can ask 12 hours before, Laura was a little bit worried about me. She can tell that story another time. But I was aware that things changed, and I became that married guy, right? But did I become that married guy? Haven't you heard all the jokes about single guy and married guy? And yes, even though at that moment I became a spouse, I was married, we did campus ministry, y'all. And so I had literally years of learning, oh, I'm not single guy anymore, right? I mean, it was like single guy could do whatever he wanted with all his money. He was like able to spend it on CDs, and I had this stereo that was about the size of a small Civic, because that's what you had in the late 80s, you know? And you could buy all the stuff to make it happen. And a married guy had a budget, and someone else who had say on that money, right? And then there was, things like I was doing campus ministry, and so the guys wanted to hang out till 2. And it's like, that's what single guy always did. And we were fun. And we were, it just happened. And then all of a sudden I'd get home and find a wife crying in bed. Because she'd be like, I was so worried. Where were you? We didn't have cell phones back then. I know that blows the mind of students here. Right? Married guy and single guy. So even though on March 23rd of that year, I became married guy, it took me a long time to inhabit married guy. Right? It took me a long time to embrace it, to really be convinced in a self-understanding, this is who I am, and to be reshaped by it, to inhabit married guy and embrace it. I'm starting with this story because scholars in the church's seminaries are saying that's the church in the West. There is an identity that we have that was declared on us, but we have really struggled through the centuries to step into it. And that's our next item on our core. You see, we've been talking about the core of the church, that just like a human body needs a strong core, what's the core of the church? And we've been talking about worship. Then we talked about formation. Last week we talked about connection. This week, we come to our next item of our core, and that's mission, or as I called it in the title, we're going to call it rooted as missionaries. That identity, just plain, you can go to sleep after you hear this, that the church has an identity that we are all missionaries, and we don't step into that identity. I'm going to try and make that case. You're going to hear me just say this over and over. As a matter of fact, let me give this disclaimer before I even move on. As we've had conversations with elders getting together and doing this, and then the core group getting together, and there have been things I've been saying, and folks have been saying, we've never heard you say that. And I looked back and I realized, I've been trying to, and this is where it's good to get feedback from you all, and realize I'm not being clear, and I'm going to try and just go through the front door and be clear today. Because I look back, if you remember the series I did in 2018, if you weren't here, that makes sense, but on the identity of, it was recovering the church's identity. It was on missional identity. A year and a half before that, I had done a series on, what did we call it? What is God about? And it was the fact that God is a missionary God. And what I was trying to do there were kind of these slow turns in a sermon series of our missionary identity. So you're going to hear some things, some quotes I use there, but I'm going to just go through the front door today. And that is, we're just going to talk about what does it mean in this part of our core and how do we move into it. I'm going to try to be clear. The final disclaimer is the fact that if you want clarity about like, well, how are we going to do this? Then I would simply ask this. If you were to go to India, China today, do you want me to give you 6 ways on how you're going to do it? Don't you have to get there and figure out? And then don't you have to pivot? And then don't you have to get with your team and go, what are we doing? That's what we have to do as a church. That's the whole sermon of where we're going. So if you need to take a nap, although we should have gotten an extra hour of sleep, right? But that's where we're going. So I want to organize our thoughts around this passage into three things. And these headings are this. What does Peter want the church to realize? Why is it important? And how might we proceed? Okay? So we're in this passage on Peter. Peter is writing to this persecuted church, a church that is in Cappadocia, Bithynia, Asia, and Turkey, as we would call it. These people who are spread throughout, all these different types of people, some Greek, some Roman, some pagan. But he's saying to this church, I know you're having trouble hanging on to Jesus, but who are you? And we come to a place that's often talked about as the place of identity. And if you, I sent out this week, in light of our connection series, a sermon by Tim, or a, really a training time, Tim Keller did. If you listen to that, raise your hand. Because, and I understand that it's been a busy week. Okay, so some of us listen to that. I understand. I'm going to draw from some things. Some of this might be repeat, but we're going to build on it with other things. Because he went to this passage to talk about what kind of community are we. And he was talking about a connected community. We're going to talk about it in terms of thinking about what this means when you think about missionary-ness. So, look at our passage. Verse 9. But you are chosen You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. There are a number of things on here that Karen Jobes at Wheaton College, in her great commentary on Peter, says these are shocking. She says, Peter here makes the radical claim that those who believe in Jesus Christ, so radical, more than shocking, sorry, whether Jew, Gentile, Greek, Roman, Cappadocian, Bithynian, whatever, though from many races, constitute a new race. That those who are born again to a living hope are a new race. That's the first thing there, right? It's this idea of genus, we would say. It's a race or a kind. You're a whole different kind of person, a different race. As a matter of fact, from this passage, E.C. Caldwell and W.H.C. Friend wrote about this in their commentaries different times, but that you saw then from the Romans actually calling Christians a different race. And because of that, when they were called, quote unquote, haters of mankind, it was because of a misunderstanding, but they were like not men. They were something else. Here's my point. So the first thing he tells the church is you're absolutely a different race, appropriate race. It doesn't mean you're still not Caucasian. But don't we kind of go, when I hang out with someone, let's just choose whatever race, a different one, whether Latino, Asian, or African descent, they're very different from me. And when I hang out with them, there are cross-cultural things happening, right? From a different race. So we continue on. So then he has these other great identity comments that he's making statements about them. But then he says, and this is the one Keller picked up, that you're a holy nation, this set-apart nation. Now, what word did he use there for nation? The Greek word, if you have been a Christian for a while, you know this, that nation is ethne, ethnos, the word we get ethnic from. He's saying you're a whole different ethnicity, and that you should be a connected community that is so different that, as Keller says, you are an alternate city on a hill within the city. You are an alter, Keller goes ahead on this and says, you're an alternate culture within a culture. Here's my point. When you think, if I was to ask you, who are the missionaries? You go, oh, they're the people that cross cultures and go to Africa. Oh, they're the people that cross cultures and go to Czechoslovakia. They're the people who cross cultures. And Peter is saying, no, church, it's when you walk out your door. You're crossing cultures because you are to be so countercultural, so different cultural, that you are the missionaries going cross culture and you don't have to get in a plane for it. That's the radical claim he's making about who we are. And I have trouble believing that, right? Because don't you go, when I think, if I was to say to you, let's go cross cultural, you think, well, they're going to have different food. and they're gonna have different smells, right? We went to China, I've been in Sierra Leone, we went to Egypt and Morocco, and trust me, the driving in Morocco, in Egypt, is not American driving, right? It is a different culture. And Peter is saying, yeah, church, every time you bump into someone, he calls them pagans in verse 12, right? Keep your conduct among the, well, I said, it's translated Gentiles, but guess what that word is? Ethnos, the same one he used for nation before. When you bump into the other, so it's like he's saying, church, you're in a unique ethnicity. And when you bump into another group of ethnicities, that is anybody who doesn't believe this gospel of Jesus Christ, that's what you're dealing with, are different ethnicities. You've gone cross-cultural. That's radical. And I don't think that way, do you? I don't wake up that way. If I did, I might think I'm a missionary. And so that's why Keller says, we're a city within a city, an alternate city, a new culture, a holy ethne, an alternate culture within the culture. We're going to see this quote later, because I am going to treat this a little bit more, almost second point, like a Sunday school class. But Wilbert Schenck, a missiologist at Fuller, wrote this: the New Testament church recognized that they were never permitted to stop thinking missiologically. Missiologically, mission is a big word people use, or missional. What they just mean is thinking like a missionary, having a missionary perspective, being missionaries. That the New Testament church, he came to the conviction in his book, that the New Testament church had these lenses as they approached their world. They had to think missiologically. And in the West, go back to my opening illustration of being single guy, married guy, we lost those lenses. Well, why is this important? That's what I just hinted to. We lost those lenses. So the first point was what Peter wants the church to realize. The second is, why is this important? It's because what the church, what our flesh, what the enemy, whatever, would love for us to do is to do two things on this idea, and that is to flatten it and forget it. Right? To flatten it and forget. Look at our passage. It is easy for us. We look here and go, so in light of this identity of being a people in verse 9, called out of darkness into his marvelous light. In verse 10, once you were not a people, but you now are a people. Time out. I didn't talk about that passage. The Greek word he uses there is laos. That's a group of people. But every scholar talks about he's looking at Hosea there. And Hosea uses, he's quoting Hosea, uses this idea that you are a people, Israel, amongst the ethne, the other tribes. So again, that's even a missional idea of cross-cultural stuff. But that we, in 9, are proclaiming the excellencies, right? We're proclaiming, living this message out. And then, well, that's the proclamation, but then 12 talks about this beautiful conduct. That's literally the word that gets used twice in here. This beauty that as a new culture gets picked up and then people go, wow, that's just unique, that's marvelous. That's where it's a good translation as well. So both our proclamation and our living come out of this culture. But here's my point. What is religion? We talk about this all the time. It's going, instead of being in relationship, instead of realizing my identity of being in Jesus, I just go, what do you want me to do? And will you treat me better if I do, right? And we flatten approaching God and our missionary living to doing. And so it is includes this, but what the missiologists tell us is the Western church flattened it to just witnessing, proclamation, and social justice. And that's just, it's just kind of, or worldview, right? That we were to be involved in witnessing, in worldview, and maybe some social justice in terms of our stuff. Example, when this gets flattened. So when I was an intern at Trinity, before we ever launched this, I did adult ed class on living missionally in your neighborhood. And I still to this day, I feel like I'm only a week out in front of you guys of what we're talking about here. But I was trying to say some things. And a woman came into my last class. We'd had six classes. And she hadn't been in any of the other ones. So I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. But literally, we are ending the 6 weeks of class. I'm grateful for feedback I was getting. She raised her hands and just goes, "So aren't you just saying we just need to do evangelism?" And I was like, "No, we're talking about being missionaries, which is an identity thing, right? How do I have a self-perception, not just what am I doing?" Let's go again to my illustration. There are lots and lots of men who do the activities of being a husband. For example, they create children. But do they have the identity of being a husband? Absolutely not. You see the distinction? And so the Western church scholars tell us we got in the habit of flattening to doing. We are doing the things, and we lost the identity of mission. We lost the identity of being missionaries. And so what does it mean to pick up this idea, to wake up? We're going to talk about this at 5 a.m. and go like, "I'm a missionary." When I was in China, I woke up and I knew it because of where I was. I looked out the window. Anyway. So the other thing, I said we flatten, but then we also forget. Obviously, what is Peter doing here? Verse 9 and 10. Do you think the church didn't know these things? He tells us earlier, they knew they were born again to a living hope. They knew the gospel of Jesus. They understood. He's drawing from Old Testament. He's taught these people. What's he doing? He is reminding them of the things they already know. Why? Because the Bible has this theme that we are a forgetful people that need to be reminded. That's not a shock to us. That's not something that we feel guilty about. It's just something we go like, okay, right? And that forgetting in the Bible is not like, what was that? It's more like, I haven't put this thing in the center of my consciousness. So a great example, God forgets our sin. It doesn't mean God says, "Oh, what did you do last Thursday? I can't remember." No, it means God doesn't take what I did last Thursday, put it in the center of his consciousness, and treat me that way. He instead sets it overhead here and says, "I see you as my beloved son in Jesus." And so the forgetful side of the church about missionariness is just, that's easy to do. We're going to do that, especially because we are in a culture. Think about that. Because there's enough, I wish I had saved these, they went past me, but just a quick example here. I heard an NPR story a while ago about a fish market in California where there were all these fights because the Asian culture of the fish market were eating these delicacies and these things that were, they weren't even extinct, but they were just things people were like, "You shouldn't eat that squid," like the jolly blue hard-headed squid. You know, I don't know, I made that up. But it was something, and it was because American culture said, "You don't do that," but here were Asian immigrants that did it. And yet, we were right, because we don't have a culture. They're wrong in their backwards culture. Is that not what the church thought through all of its missionary enterprises in the 17, 1800s? Western culture is the best. And so we forget. And then I heard another one that so many of our arguments right now, when we go overseas to deal with our political situations, we think that, well, you should have tolerance, you should have understanding. And majority world of our culture goes, pluralism, right? These kind of, they go, why? Because your white Western American post-enlightenment culture tells me I should do that? That's not my culture. And we go, oh, no, no, we just have the truth. And we forget that we are infiltrated with the culture of America, and the American church forgot that as well. And so picking up a missionary mindset gets toward our formation of just, how do I think through how I'm being formed, because we flatten and we forget. And so here's what happened. Again, I mentioned this great missionary movement. And then if you know of the student volunteer movement, this is where we get a little Sunday school-y here today. The student volunteer movement in the 1800s, C.T. Studd, John Mott, these guys, there was this massive, it ended up, you know, you hear of Jim Elliot years, about a decade, all these students going overseas as missionaries, and it was great. But what we realized in doing that is that missions became over there. Missionary thinking was, well, I've got to go when I get on the ground in my country, and we forgot that we were on the ground as missionaries here. And so there was a dude, Leslie Newbegin was his name, he was in India, and he came back to England in the 70s, and he started looking, going like, we forgot that this is a culture. And he started writing all this stuff, and so missiologists started pumping out from his thinking in the 90s, and basically said the church in America and then in the West, England and all that, has to have a Copernican revolution. Just like Copernicus went, no, everything's not revolving around the earth, everything revolves around the sun, right? That was radical. They were saying Newbegin started something that the American church has to say, this is radical, this is different, that we are missionaries. So what I'm gonna do right now is pass out just some of the books on my shelf and some of the stuff I've read. Some of them are articles I've used before and I don't have, so these are gonna be passed out and we're gonna read these together. And then we'll conclude. This is just to help you see, because I can sound maybe passionate, but it's like these are things I'm trying to put together over these years as we look at what these scholars that we have paid to study the history of missions, the working of missions, and all that. We're going to read these together, so I know you're going to skim ahead. Hopefully we have enough. I think we do. If not. And I think they're being loaded online for you as a PDF. Great. In the chat. So click on your chat and you can open the PDF. So I'm just going to read this one. This is the one I think I mentioned to you before. Wilbert Schenck from Fuller, a 1990s missionary, he taught missions. He said, to be a disciple of Jesus Christ and a member of his body is to live a missionary experience in the world. There is no doubt that this was how the earliest Christians understood their calling. The New Testament church recognized that they were never permitted to stop thinking missiologically. Again, just put in wherever you see mission, missiologically, like I have in that thing, just put in like missionaries. Next one, this is Andrew Kirk, who taught at the University of Birmingham in the UK, taught mission there, mission and world Christianity. The church, so two, the church is by nature missionary to the extent that if it ceases to be missionary, it has not just failed in one of its tasks, it has ceased being the church. Do you see the identity language that he's getting at? You're not even the church if we're not seeing ourselves. So next one, at its best, missional, living like a missionary, missional describes not a specific activity of the church, but the very essence and identity of the church as it takes up its role in God's story in the context of its culture and participates in God's mission to the world. Again, you see identity and essence. This I used in our missional identity series. I don't know what page. I think that's Goheen. Michael Goheen teaches at Covenant Seminary. He's a missiologist that teaches at our denominational center. Next one, four. Mission cannot be something separate from or added to the essence of the church. The essential nature of the local congregation, the hope, is in and of itself mission, or else the congregation is not really the church. Wow. Next one, five. Mission is no longer simply one of the activities of the church. Rather, it defines the church's existence. There needs to be a whole reevaluation of the nature and ministry of the church and its role in God's redemptive purpose. A recovery of a missionary understanding of the church is a vital matter if the church in the West is to remain as a significant presence. So see him, that's our seminary guy. He's training all the pastors in our denomination to say we have to start thinking missionary-like. Okay, next, six. The missionary movement throughout the 19th century altered little in the Western church's self-conception. So that's what I was talking about, that until like the 1950s, and then later when Leslie Newbegin came back, we were in this sending missionary idea, missions is over there, and it didn't get altered. Now, by the mid-20th century, the church was coming to understand that in any place, it is a community sent by God. Mission is not something the church does, a part of its total program. Know the church's essence is missional, for the calling and sending action of God forms its identity. 7, Christians living in modern culture face a fundamental challenge. What is our challenge? That challenge is to learn to think about their culture in missional terms. That's Schenck again from Fuller. And then this was in a video, Walter Brueggemann, who teaches at Columbia Seminary. The church in the West is still a long way from thinking of itself as a missional community. Let me pause here. I'm not listing these to say, let's feel guilty about this. I'm listing it to say, this is where we figure out going like, oh, wow, this is where I'm excited about having community group discussions and continuing saying as a community, how do we move into this if this is who we are? So let's finish these. Don't confuse the terms mission-minded and missional. I think that's an interesting distinction, right? Don't confuse the terms being mission-minded and being missional. The first, mission-minded, refers more to an attitude of caring about missions, particularly overseas. Missional, again, substitute living like a missionary, means actually doing mission right where you are. Missional means actually adopting the posture of a missionary. That's kind of like point one of our sermon, wasn't it? So missional means actually adopting the posture of a missionary, learning and adapting to the culture around you while remaining biblically sound. Think of it this way. Missional means being a missionary without leaving your zip code. You can see how a particular congregation or denomination can be mission-minded without being missionary-minded. I would change that too. That's Ed Stetzer. He teaches at Wheaton. He heads the Billy Graham evangelism thing, and his book on church planting is, we have got to make churches think of themselves as missionaries. Okay. Missiologics 10. This is Stetzer again, later in the book. Missiological thinking is not the same as missionary support. Many churches will support cross-cultural missions, yet oppose missiological thinking within their own context. All right, three more. Today, North America needs to be treated as a mission field in the same way that we in the West have approached much of the rest of the world for the past several centuries. Just as God is a missionary God, so the church is to be a missionary church. We don't agree with that, right? I mean, we don't disagree with that. We're learning. That's our conversation going like, oh, yeah, the West needs missionaries. It's why, yeah, okay. Theologian Richard Moo says we're in a missionary location, that North America needs to be considered a mission field in the same way we once considered the underdeveloped world. And finally, this is Gruder, who I forget where he teaches. We've come to see that mission is not merely an activity of the church, rather mission is the result of God's initiative. Rooted in God's purposes to restore and heal creation. Mission means sending, and it's the central biblical theme describing the purpose of God's action in human history. We have learned to speak of God as a missionary God. Thus, we have learned to understand the people, the church, as a sent people. Quoting John 20:21 here, right? As the Father has sent me, so I send you. You see, the understanding of the church is that, what is God like? He's love, he's all those things. But the Father sent Jesus. You can get verses for that. What does Jesus tell us in John? The Father and the Son send the Spirit. If you're Eastern Orthodox, you can just say the Father sent the Spirit. That's okay. But they send the Spirit. And then what does the Spirit do? And what does Jesus do? They send the church, right? And then at the end, what happens? God sends Jesus to bring the consummation. God is always sending. It's his character. And if I am united to him, well, the sent ones are the missionaries. Then I'm a missionary because Jesus is a missionary. Now, I've gone long because we had all those quotes. So I just will quickly list. How might we proceed? Let's figure that out together. If you want, I go back to what I said at the start. If you want 7 steps to being a missionary, we can talk about some things we're going to try and we want to do. But some of that is figuring it out in community with your team. And who's your team? This is our mission team. Right? And so, you know, there are things like moving into that identity. How do I do that? Repentance. When I was married guy but acting like single guy, what did I have to do? I had to say, I didn't see it, and I'm sorry. Make me. Help me understand. I want to change. What does it mean for us to engage in that prayer? And here's the suggestion. So third thing is prayer. Everyone pull out your phone right now, and you can ignore me for the rest of the time. Pull out your phone. I'm serious. Pull out your phone if you have it. I'm going to wait. This is what we'll end with while I talk about praying for the identity. Joining, if you're curious and want to be on the mission team, the core team has formed this newer mission team to think about all of our missionaries, including you. The cards we handed out last week, inviting people. Okay, your phones are out. Go to your alarms, or your clock, probably. Then go to alarms. Set a new alarm. And I want you to set it for 10:02. Tomorrow, I guess, is what will come up. But then on that, as you open it up, I want you to, you'll see, at least if it's a Google phone, I don't know what the iPhone has, you can choose days. Choose every day of the week that your phone would go off at 10:02. Okay? AM. You, if you're up at 10:02, you can do that. AM. And here's why. Luke 10:2 says, pray to the Lord of the harvest that he would send out laborers into his harvest field. When your alarm goes off, that's all I want you to say. Or maybe say, Lord, send out laborers into your harvest field and help me be one of them. Help us as Hope be one of them. And if that interrupts a meeting, I'm sorry. I try to let it interrupt my meetings. I can do that. You might not be able to. If you have a way to make that vibrate, or if you turn your phone on silent so that alarms don't go off and then you see it at, you know, 2 p.m., that's fine as well. Then at 2 p.m., pray it. But what if we as a church started seeing ourselves more and more as missionaries? And there are things, and let me conclude. Thanks, Children's Church people. I'm sorry I went long. Let's pray. Lord, send out laborers into your harvest field. As we wrestle with this, because I again still go, I don't know, I just know we want to move toward it. I don't have answers. I place this before you, as we as a church place it before you, and say, help us change our identity, and may that lead to the blessing of the nations, the ethne around us here west of Charlottesville. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen.